Just cheer us on.
Welcome, everybody, to the R2Cast Christmas special. You have probably already noticed that this is the first ever time on the R2Cast that Wallace has not introduced an episode, and that is because for this episode, we are me, Edward, who is the co-host of the All In podcasts, if you listen to any of them. I am going to be interviewing Wallace on what has happened in his life over the last year, because if anybody's been a regular listener, you'll know that he's not short of stories from his past 12 months from all around the globe. The previous podcast was 164 with Ifan Roberts. He is a dairy farmer that started off with absolutely nothing, and he now owns 360 dairy cows at only 28 years old, which is quite exceptional. And I'll let you go and listen to that podcast to find out how he's achieved that. The next episode is going to be the first episode of series 4. It's going to be on Monday, January the 8th, so we're going to have a little break, and that's going to be R2Cast 165 with Amy Stoner. This is going to be the last episode of the year, and it's going to be the 91st episode of the year, which is quite a lot of episodes. So I'll now hand over to our guest for today, which you will know exactly the voice that you're just about to hear. So Wallace, do you want to introduce yourself and welcome?
It feels so weird to not say welcome back. I just want to say it. First off, Ed, that's why I hired you as co-host. You're good at this, man. You really are. Yeah,
thanks, man.
91st, what was it? Yeah, 90-odd amount of episodes this year. It's kind of mad when you think the first episode of this year was number 74 and we started it 2 years before that.
Yeah,
it's fairly ramped up this year, and let's look at the last year. It's been quite good, but I mean, maybe before we get into that, I'd probably like to throw out a few thank yous to, first off, Ed, for being involved with All Inside. It's quite nice. I really like the food and farm inside. It's created a brand for me, and it's created a pretty fantastic network, which I think Ed's starting to find now as well. But having that All Inside is really cool, because we're bringing folk on that we don't know about the topics. And albeit I can probably chat to anyone, having that sort of two different, you know, perspectives and that sort of trinamic, as I've started called it, really works well. So that's been really good. And then to make the podcast possible, I mean, it was going to still be happening anyway, but releasing quite as much as we are, I don't think there's many more prolific than it at the minute. Certainly on food and farming side, but also including the second batch as well. You know, Howden Rural, previously A-Plan, been really good. Fraser Searle, who you may know as Sensational Sandwiches on Instagram and TikTok, he has absolutely blown up recently. He's been great to work with, and everyone at A-Plan and now Howden have been fantastic. I'm sure you'll be hearing their information as we go throughout the episode. Scottish Farmer have been around for, at the point of release of this episode, almost 2 years now, so it's been pretty cool as well. And hopefully, not by time of release of this episode, but I think the next All In or the one after that will have brought on a temporary sponsor on there, and see how that goes as well with Magic Mind, which is quite exciting too. And that's the first time we've actually mentioned the name. So yeah, thank you for listening and supporting, because it's became pretty good for both of us, really, hasn't it?
100%. It's nothing without the listeners, so I think they've got to get the biggest thank you. I've not been on for too long. It's the year in March.
It will be about then, yeah.
About a year in March, so I've not done too many yet, but I'm really enjoying it so far, so hopefully we can keep going with it and meet different people, because the people up to now have been pretty mind-blowing. I know the one that's just released before this with Kate Rolls, that was totally different gravy for me. I was so out of my league. They were just, Wallace and Kate were able to chat for ages, and I was like, well, I've absolutely no idea what's going on here.
I mean, I was able to talk about geography, but I wasn't able to compete with, you know, albeit as we're going to get into it, it's been quite a good few months, but Kate's life is just cool.
Totally. So, over the last year, you've done 91 podcasts. Well, you've done 90 podcasts. This is the 91st. What, talk us through some of them through the year.
Man, it's hard, and it's with the first one of the series, series three, was Luke Ablett, number 74, and that used to be a thing I was really good at, was you say a number, I can probably say what it is, and that is no longer the case with the prolificacy we're releasing. Genuinely, pretty rapidly after you and I started, I just can't do it. I could do it up to about episode 115 and then it stopped. But yeah, we started with Luke and we had a few around that time. Around that time was when I'd started the group podcast. And the reason I'd started a group podcast was I felt like the sort of individual, or maybe the odd couple here and there, had kind of absolutely not reached a ceiling, but or somewhat of a view ceiling, but not like an interest ceiling. You know, I just wanted to change something up and I wanted to start getting groups on. So I had things like Countryside Learning and RET and QMS and what on, which was really good and quite thought-provoking, because it was more than just one person. It was also looking at sort of policies of companies and charities and stuff. And that's absolutely still a thing, the group podcast. It's just not how I'd intentionally started it. It was going to be four food and farming and then two groups. I just sort of fell through the cracks. So All In sort of took in that gap. But yeah, probably important to mention that around January 8th or 16th, I think it was, we did, Ed and I, along with Elspeth and Callum, for one group, two groups from Lornith, did speech making. And basically because of that, I was conscious I wanted a co-host on a new series. And that's where we sort of saw Ed asking a lot of questions, because he was asking me the questions in it, and that's where that came in. So that's how it started. I mean, some great guests. It's so hard to look back and say who stands out. But I mean, one for me that stands out, and it's not being selfish or whatever, or whatever the opposite of humble is the one where we spoke about us going to Tanzania and Rwanda. It was just nice to look back on what was an absolutely phenomenal experience, which we'll get into later on in the episode. It was really lovely to do that. Trying to remember even when things were. I quite enjoyed one with Neil Barrett, who's a hoof trimmer, who spoke some really, really open about mental health, which was really interesting. I think the All In series is really starting to interest me, because I mean, like Ed and I live in agriculture, whether that's Ed is farming, lecturing in agriculture, we're in Young Farmers, I do a lot of speaking at farming events. Like, I would say 98% of my life is farming, and it's actually a class just getting into that. And just like, we love what we do, but it's also cool to see many more things out there. So yeah, having professional footballers, and we've got a professional darts player coming up, professional snooker player, that's just fun. Like, it's really cool. So yeah, I don't really think there's any that absolutely full on jump out as the best that I've done, because they all really are good. So yeah, nice. So I'd say
nice. So outside of the R2 cast and outside of podcasting, it's not the only way you make money. What's the bread and butter for you? What's the lecturing, as you just mentioned, how's that went over the last year?
Yeah, man, I think folk that listen to podcasts, and I think even other folk think that, like, I just spend my life doing podcasts, and it's actually not true. It's maybe, I don't know, what, 6 hours of a week, whereas, yeah, I'm lecturing the best part of 40. So I don't know how you could not know this if you do listen to a few episodes, but yeah, I'm a lecturer. I've been lecturing for SRUC, so I did my degree in agriculture at SRUC. Graduated 2018, then went on and did a Masters in Food Security, which I graduated from Glasgow Uni the year later. I was out of education or academia, whatever you want to call it, for about 9 months before I was contacted about lecturing, having just started R2K, not the R2 cast, R2K, just posting little videos at Lamentown during lockdown. Yeah, we started lecturing, which has been a roller coaster, very much one of those sort of inferiority complexes as we started, that'd be fair to say. But yeah, over the years, we're now 3 and a bit years in, and sort of last year, so, you know, this will be released in December 2023, around September time 2022, Agriculture Next Gen HNC started. Now, for those of you that are interested in this, we'll get into it with Nuffield, because I'm a bit of a nerd in this, even further than just my job. The system or the model that was implemented before Scottish Agricultural Education was pretty intense. You were looking at like 45 assessments in your first year and about 52 in your second year from memory. Now they would change year on year somewhat, but for the most part, a ridiculous workload for a sort of 9-month session. We've now taken that down to in the ballpark of 20, a very much more holistic approach, looking at not just report. We're offering sort of students the opportunity to show us how they can put information over. So we've got different presentations, posters, we've got interviews, we've got them actually taking classes, we've got a podcast, which has been really rewarding. I've really enjoyed taking that class. It is me that teaches it, funnily enough. And then, yeah, a lot of trips, which I think is great, because we've got so much at the Barony that I think is great, but there's so much we don't have, and I think we've got to show that. So I've got a module called Diversified Enterprise in Rural Business, which started around the start of this year, and another one called Specialised Farming Systems. Diversified Enterprises looks at either a farm system that is a farm system now, or a place that was a farm and has diversified into something else, either that's alongside the current farming enterprise or it's now overtake it, which was really interesting. We went to the Buffalo Farm, or Nesby Farm, and a place here in Dumfries called a Loch Hill Farm, which is a beef rearing unit that's moved into quite a lot of things, in fairness, contracting pods, but we were focusing mainly on the biomass boilers. And then Specialised Farming Systems is just looking at farming systems away from the conventional. So instead of, when we say dairy, we definitely think cattle. We were at a sheep and goat place. We were at a goat meat place, that sort of thing. So looking at different stuff there, which I found thoroughly enjoyable. It's got its cracks, it's got its issues, it's in its pilot year, but I think it's generally moving towards a better model. So yeah, that's my nerdy lecturer speak, but I absolutely love the job. We've got an absolute family of a team, and it's just an absolute joy to go to work on a Monday. So that's my main breadwinning, as you say.
Yeah, your bread and butter. That's awesome, knowing that someone really does love their job, and you can really hear the passion that you've got for the whole industry there. And I think like the diversification things, that's great for learning, because I know I was at college, well, at the college that Wallace teaches at, before, literally just before he was there, I was there studying, and yeah, there was certainly not much in the way of looking at diversification and that kind of thing. So it's great to be able to open people's eyes, because if you think of farming, especially in Scotland, I think you just think of cows and sheep and maybe a few tractors on top of that, but outside of that, there's not too much. So it's good to be able to know that, because there's a lot of farmers stuck in their ways that kind of need to see how they can make money outside of that.
Definitely. And I think ag education has been a bit of a rut for a while. And that's someone that's been through totally. It. And I think we're in a great... I genuinely am proud of what we're doing. I don't really speak about stuff if I don't mean it. I'll just pretend it's not happening, but I'm genuinely proud of what we're doing. Like, we've got a winter show that at the end of November we have students dressing Holstein bullen heifers, calves, Dorset yows, mule yows, and they show them for a livestock championship, and then you've got tractor and quad competition on the same day all coming together. And now we've just brought in our HND stock judging competition, which our winner Jack, which we can now say is going to stock judge in Paris next year. So yeah, we're really, really changing what's out there. Yeah,
that's class.
It's good. And then in the sort of springtime, one thing I really, really wish I'd done, I had access to show and stock if I wanted, but one thing I really wish I'd done was what we're doing now, and that's with both crop and grass plots.
Yeah.
So students are involved in choosing what application and manure they want to use and why, and then basically who has the most weight, most fresh weight at the end, wins a competition, and then who has the sort of strongest silage analysis wins a competition. The crops is kind of tricky, because by the very nature, you're not really harvesting up the same group that put it in, but they get to drill, they get to do all the field work, and I can't stress how invaluable I think that is.
Yeah, the knowledge they'll gain is unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there's loads of the students at college that won't be from farms that have anything to do with crops. Like, even if there'll be loads that don't have anything to do with farming, never mind have anything to do with arable, it'll be very, very minuscule at the Barony.
Yeah.
And that'll have any rough idea of what it's about. So it's great to be able to learn them skills, because yeah, it's amazing to hear actually how much it's changed even in the last 5 years since I was there. 5 years ago, I was doing the HNC, and the winter show wasn't a thing, and things like that. So it's great to see that it's moving on and pushing on.
No, it's good. It's good.
So this time last year, you put an advert in the concert programme and you wanted a phrase to put in it.
Yeah.
A phrase to put in it. And we were talking about this at a concert practice, and I just said I didn't think anyone was really listening. And I just go, Wallace Curry, a face for podcasting. And I don't really think much else of it. And then I'm looking through the programme just before it's kind of printed out and finalised. And I'm just looking and it says, oh, R2 cast, Wallace Curry, a photo of Wallace. And there's a wee bubble speech. And it says, a face for podcasting in the speech. So I actually made it onto the advert, which I was quite surprised about. Did you name me out as well?
You're a big deal then. You're the chairman.
At the time people were reading that and it's like, wow, the chairman's pretty damn mean. So but it's only to Wallace, I promise. You can probably tell that if you listen to any of the old ends.
Oh, we give it good to each other, man.
Totally. But the reason I bring that up is because I said at the time you had a face for podcasting, but in June at the Royal Highland Show, your face actually made it onto a few screens, didn't it? Tell us a wee bit about that.
First off, man, you're getting good at these transitions. That's good. I like that. Yeah, it's good. It's always hard to do that first, an easy phone. That was a good one. I was wondering where the hell that was going. I thought you were going to talk about your face for podcasting at the minute. Highland Show was cool. So come April, which was kind of mad because... So a little bit of background. In May 2022, I joined Young Farmers. And then in April 2023, I was Vice Chair of Communications and Marketing at national level for the organisation, which was a bit of a, shock to everyone. Maybe a mistake on SAYFC's behalf. But yeah, come April this year, I'll be chair unless I'm in trouble. But yeah, so with that, came our committee was in charge of basically running RHS TV. Now, I'm not at all taking any credit from Simon Cousins' team. Simon's in charge of RHS TV, but they wanted to have folk on the screen that wasn't just random folk, and SAYFC members at the Highland Show are well-kent faces. So Laura McCulloch heading the team with our staff member, Paul, who will come up later on. Basically, we set out to find people that would be good for being on camera. Now, I wasn't really much use at this point because I genuinely didn't know many folk in the organisation. So I was like, well, I'm definitely keen, so I put my name for it. And I can't remember the number of folk. I was speaking about it at an SLT meeting yesterday. I can't remember the number, but it was around 20-odd people from, Young Farmers members got involved. A few of us done 3 or 4 videos. And it was basically just, you imagine a show, Royal Welsh do it very well as well. Highland Show started during COVID. They're just documenting everything. They've got Dougie Vipond, Deacon Blue and Landward sort of presenting it. And then they say, oh, let's head out to whatever. And for me, my two main ones were the goats and the alpacas. I jumped and bit the hand off the person offering me the chance to do the goats. You were filmed and you were sort of, it was your little sketch, maybe 4 minutes. They were very much do what you want. I don't know if that was the case for everyone. I'm quite confident in Cameron, obviously, but... I just had a great time, and it's I think it's been clipped. I've been sent the video a few times for a walk into the goat tent, and I'm like in the campest voice possible. I'm like, this is heaven in a tent. and it was like, I love goats. I had a really good time, and I think I'm not someone, and I've said this many a time on the podcast, that sort of puts titles and dates on where I want to be and whatnot, but I'd love to give TV presenting a shot, to be honest, because I don't think I'm any more comfortable than when I'm on camera, which is mad, quite abnormal, maybe psychotic, but it was good fun, man. It was really good fun. I really enjoyed it.
That's class. There's not many people that would be able to say that, I don't think, able to say that they're most comfortable when they've got a camera looking at them.
I don't know what can go wrong. I'm going to shout out poor Sky Watson, who I won't say what happened, but I'm sure those that know will be having a good giggle at me saying this, but Sky had a wee bit of our tongue-tied, shall we say, if we're doing it live, right? And it's so funny, and she dealt with it brilliantly. But that's the bit, like, the way I see that is, like, who cares?
It's entertaining.
It's funny, man. Exactly. You're doing it for a reason, and if you... Yeah, and...
Like, everybody's watching it to be entertained.
Yeah, of course they are.
In some shape or form. Like, obviously, you don't want to really embarrass herself, and I think it's far too many people have way too much fear on that.
Yeah.
Actually embarrassing themselves and someone hearing something that 100%. Wasn't 100% perfect, because nobody's perfect with anything.
So. And the person who looks rubbish is the person who goes on. It's like, hey, so I'm here today. No one wants to see that. Yeah. Nobody
Everybody
wants to
hates
see
that.
That.
Yeah. We say that kind of thing all the time, like with concert as well. Like, it's just like that is literally the thing that must get said every single practice. It's just you've just got to be yourself, and if you make a mistake, like the worst thing is if you just go in your shell and just stand there and just huff, and then that's when you look the most silly. So
well,
it's the exact same.
The more you look like a fanny, the less you look like a fanny.
Yeah,
and it's so true.
Exactly it.
It's so true. Eh? Yeah, it's
that's
so true.
Exactly it. But people don't usually realise that until they've actually done at least one concert, I feel, most of the time. So your case was different, but for the young ones, I feel anyway, they're just like, oh, I don't want to do that, that's embarrassing, I'll look so funny. Whereas when you actually watch it, you're like, well, you're not trying, so you're actually looking.
But you see those young ones this year, a year on, having done it, and they're like, yeah, let's go, man,
yeah,
it's a good time. 100%. I love to see you, man, I love to see you.
100%. At the start of the year, maybe when you didn't... Maybe when you had a bit more time in your hands and you were really into your fitness and you were losing weight and you were really going for that at the time.
There was
and
a
you were walking. No. I didn't mean to go that way, but I have, so I'm going to commit to it. No, I'm going to try and skip by the insult, maybe. But I think it's fair to say in the first 6 months you did quite a lot of walking. You were what? Three marathons a week?
Probably about two and a half.
Two and a half marathons a week you were walking. That's a lot of hours on the road. And I was always like, because I spoke to you about it sometimes, and I was like, why don't you just go and run and you'll get it done quicker and you'll burn more calories with less distance than that? Because I'm like, I just don't have the time to be going and like walking for 3-4 hours at a time. Like, it's a great way to burn calories and get an exercise, and you just said your knees couldn't handle it, which is totally fair, and it really did work for you. And I think off the back of that, that's when you came up with your idea for a charity case. No, a charity fundraiser, which, tell us a wee bit about that. What happened there?
Yeah, well, it's quite a story. I think that, do you know what's interesting? I mean, that walk-in started about August time, and pretty quickly, because I started as, I was going to do 3 kilometres a day, which is half a marathon a week.
Did it only start in August?
This
August?
No, it's basically stopped this August. Like, a year, 15 months ago is when it started. Quickly snowballed. I genuinely fell in love with it. But, like, just before we get into the sort of charity thing, I think... I've always been someone that Ross McKelvey, shout out to Ross, who's been on the podcast, volleyball player, told me, he was like, he gave me a few hints and like, you know, stop focusing on the outcome, go for the journey, which is so true. And I've always wanted, you know, you see fitness influencers and you're like, how cool would it be to look like that? And I remember saying to Ross, I was like, there's so many times that I've wanted this, but now like I fucking want it.
Mm.
And what I wanted wasn't that fitness influencer look anymore. It was just being fit, being
healthy.
Let's not even say fit, because I wasn't at that stage. I was, but I'm not at the minute. But being healthy and understanding that, and even now, like when I'm eating bad, which is not as much now as it was a couple months ago, I'm conscious of what that means, and I'm conscious of how to work with that. So yes, I have definitely stopped exercising as much as I was a few months ago, but I'm in a better spot and understand it, and I know getting back to it's going to be easier. I am trying. My leg's just sore. I'm working on physio.
Totally.
But, so the walking got pretty intense. I was walking probably more than 99.9% of the population. But I loved it. I could edit podcasts and all that sort of stuff. But with that, it didn't only make me lose the best part of 4 stone, but it it made me come out of what was the worst mental health bout I've ever had. And I mean, like, holy shit, if people go through that on a daily basis, man, we've got a broken country. Like, it's so hard.
Which they definitely
will. They do, man. They do. And like, you and I speak about how lucky we are loving our jobs, and I think we kind of say it like, oh man, it's so good that leaving a Friday and I'm excited to go back. You don't leave on a Friday, you know, just love doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't think we realise just how insane that is.
You wouldn't really, I don't think you'd appreciate it until you didn't have it, until we were thrown into a job that we hated, and we were literally looking for 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. I just can't.
I know people like that, and sometimes you've got to go through that at times to get to the other side, but damn, it's rough.
But I mean, like, I had no issues with work, I had no issues with whatever. I was starting R2K, it was starting to get good, but I broke up with my partner 6 years at the time, 2 days after buying a house. No, not 2 days, 3 months. And we sold that and it was fine, and then there were some pretty major things happened that we don't need to get into. I mean, I'm happy talking to people about it, I'm not going to say it on here. And with that, it happened around December time, 2021, and I just, apart from my birthday, 26th December that year, I worked every single day until about 3 a.m. Now, working could be doing emails, it could be editing podcasts, it could be thinking of Facebook posts, it could be anything. I'd just done anything to avoid my own mind. And then we got to June time, end of June, when I sort of went on holiday, and that July, I just, like, I melted, mate. Like, I completely melted. I probably pushed all my friends away. I know I pushed Emily away at that stage, and then now Emily and I are good, thankfully. But I was in a bad place, and I was like, I need to sort something, and I need to create some kind of routine. So yeah, I started walking. That was the August, and then we were walking around a ridiculous amount, and come April time, I was like, the reason I just said all that story is for a reason. Around April time, when I came on as vice chair of comms and marketing, around that time, I realised just how much I'd got out of Young Farmers, even though it had only been 11 months, and I'd kind of joined as an older member that pretty much done nothing, so I'm quite busy over the summer, and then joined concert and speech making and maybe the odd sort of golf night and dinner or whatever. But I'd gained so many friends in this area and whatever, so I had a lot to thank SAYFC for. And I didn't have anything directly to thank RSABI for, but just knowing in the place I was mental health-wise and the support they offer people in the rural sector, I was like, I want to help these people. So those two groups, one I'm obviously actively involved in, and one I'm sure would class me as a pretty helpful member too, that I try and work with as much as I can. I started coming up with an idea of a fundraiser, and I went through a million different things, but the one I ended up on, for those that know and for those that don't, I'm from the Isle of Arran, not the one that's famous for wool, the one that's famous for whiskey. whiskey and tourism. And if you walk around it, it's 56 miles. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, but quite a lot of folk have done that. Let's do it twice in 50 hours. It's 112 miles, go one way, go the other way, no one can say you went the easy way. I thought that was grand, and it was. I mean, 112 miles I'd never done in what was going to be three stints with very little rest. But I had done 56. Is that 2.5 marathons? Yes, I've done 56, which is about 16 or 17 hours from memory. So I knew I was perfectly capable of it. And yeah, went back to Arran for a couple of weeks, started some training, absolutely buggered my knee. I've not really said that much. I couldn't walk for about the 13 or the 14 days that I was there to train, which wasn't handy, don't
you
me
came
wrong.
Back to go to the physio, didn't you?
That's right, yeah, so yeah. It did, man. Yeah, it did. Completely forgot that, actually. And then, yeah, come the 18th of July, I was time to set off. The exact same day, actually, that Amy Margrove's team had done their A to B cycling at Bigger Show, and they made some great money, and great effort. I think they did 165 miles on the bike, so you know, a similar feat to what I was planning doing on my feet, in fairness. And they smashed it. I didn't. Someone smashed me. what happened was I was 21 kilometers in, which, for those that don't do metrics, half a marathon exactly, and I was hit by a van. I think it's called an IDQ3. It's like the new electric Volkswagen Bongo. I've seen three. I've seen that one's side as it hit me. I've seen one other, and I've seen one on a tow truck. Probably the one that bounced into me. But yeah, I was just coming up Whiteinbey Hill, and it hit into me, and I like sort of managed to get out of the way, and I was like, geez, this is going to hit me. It was quite a scary moment. I sort of bounced off the wheel arch, and generally, apart from a wee bruise on my left side, like, it was fine. And then as I landed, it was like a sort of, almost like a landing, like a superhero pose type thing. Not very superhero-ly. And I just felt this really sharp pain up the back of my lower right leg. And I was like, oh, geez, cramp is the last thing I need a sixth of the way into this walk. Anyway, went about another mile. And at that stage, mum and dad, they were sort of coming every 3 hours or something and just getting some carbs into me and getting some food and some drink and getting new socks and whatever. They're like, how are you getting on? And I was like, oh, just get by a car. And like I said it like that, I remember saying that. And I think had I not said it like that, they'd have stopped me. But I said it as if, like, you know, I probably never said what had happened. Adrenaline was still going on at that stage. You know, a mirror had hit my arm or whatever. And I'm like, really? And I was like, yeah, I can't believe it. That was all I said. Then I kept going. I'd done another 26 kilometres. And I mean, by 23 of that, my foot was flapping. Like, I was throwing my foot. Genuinely. Seen ducks Jeez. Run? Man, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
And mum came to pick me up because my plan was, I started at 5 in the afternoon. My plan was to have a sleep at 1 in the morning for 3 hours. Mum came and got 20-1, and that was us sitting at 1.3 marathons out of the 4.6. So, you know, a fair chunk away, you know, over a quarter, probably sitting at 30% of the road. For those that know Aaron, I'd went south from the Kinloch, round the south end, came through Brodick and got to Brodick Castle. When mum picked me up, I just started crying, and it felt like a failure. I couldn't do anything. I was like, I can't manage. And forgetting the, like, let's even forget the car thing happened. Even at, you know, 40 kilometres, which was, you know, maybe 7 or 8 kilometres before I had to stop, I was still well quicker than anyone that had walked it once. Like, yeah. I'm a quick walker, and distance doesn't impact me because I've just done so much. Got in the car and I was like, Mum, I can't do this. And she's like, no, you manage, you know, support happens. And then I sort of explained the car thing. She was like she realised what had happened the first time. She was like, right, we're getting a bath, sort of kept me calm. I'd, instead of 2 or 3 hours sleep, I had 5. I woke up and I was like, oh, geez, like, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm not stopping. Dad was like, I'll come with you. And then, obviously, this had happened with the leg and the sleep and the bath and the time had taken. It was bad by now. And this isn't me calling out my dad at all. This is just showing you how determined I still was to do it. For 4 kilometres, I was still well ahead of Dad. And it was nice, really nice to have Dad there. But we got to that sort of 3.5-4 kilometre mark the next day. So we're sitting at pretty much 50k total out of about 180k walk. And I was like, I can't do this. I had to pull over. Sounds like I was in the car. I'd sit in a bridge in the middle of Corrie and I was like, I just can't do this. Phoned Mum, went to A&E, and they were like, yeah, if you imagine your calf, it's essentially like two muscles. You know, like if you see sort of defined calf, there's like a line up the middle. Essentially tore the middle. Not fully, because obviously I wouldn't be able to walk at all, but yeah, not really in good place. So yeah, that was the end of that story, unfortunately. And for those of you listening, I mean, I think this will be coming out a couple of weeks after recording. I think it was in the Daily Record talking about it last week, so if you want to go see any photos of me there. It was really interesting. I think I sent you photos, like, seeing the difference in definition from my leg was insane.
Yeah.
Like, I have extremely muscular calves, especially then. And it was almost halved. It was gone. Mad. It was insane. It
totally deteriorated.
In not a week, maybe 4 days. But yeah, it was disheartening, man. It was really quite a low point. You felt pretty stupid, in fairness. And we raised about 3K, and that is still open at the minute, and it's still open for the one reason that I am going to do it. I'm just not going to manage this year, which we'll get into, I'm sure. But yeah, really quite a cool story, in fairness. had I managed fine, I wouldn't have a really cool story to talk about, but... It'll be quite a good story once we finish it eventually. So
definitely. I know. Knowing you, you don't let things go by and not complete them. So I'm sure at some point, it might not be in the very near future, but I'm sure at some point you'll definitely complete that, and hopefully you'll raise even more money than you already have, because it's for two unbelievable causes that I'm pretty close to as well, so it's great to see you supporting them.
No, brilliant ones.
But sticking on SAYFC, so as we know, you my first memory of even meeting you at all, I actually picked you up to go to the dinner dance.
So you did?
Yeah.
I don't think I could have told you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked Tasha, you up.
Aileen and me.
Yeah. And Will.
And Will, yes. Will.
So I picked you. Will and Aileen up.
That's right.
And
because I was sat in the middle, and unfortunately for Tasha, I couldn't really keep everything closed. I was wearing a kilt.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I was like, who's this humongous hairy man in the back of my car who I hadn't even met? And Will was like, oh yeah, just could you come and pick up me, Wallace and Aileen, like, Wallace is in lecture at the bar and he's a good lad and that. He's the speaker for the night. I was like, yeah, no worries. Just swung by when I was on the way. And then at the dinner dance, Wallace spoke. Thanks. That was it for me as the vice chair doing the vote of thanks. It was a...
He's not exaggerating.
It was a humbling moment for me.
It's a humbling moment for me. Just stood up in front of folk for like probably my biggest speech at that point. A bunch of my students, like, and then yeah, sat down and you barely had the time to thank me.
Prick. Well, that's that's why the vice chair does the vote of thanks in general, because that's how you learn, and it was a massive learning curve. And
yeah,
I didn't even think I did anything wrong until he called me out on it about 6 months later when I actually got to know him a little bit better. But, no, over that next year, you didn't have anything to do with Young Farms at that point, did you? You thought it was something that you would never be interested in. And, yeah, as you said before, you start coming to things. Golf night was the first thing I remember you coming to.
The first thing I went to was your concert night out.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I don't think I spoke to you, though. It was sort of never like Perry and Will and Colin and that. Yeah, but yeah. The first night I went, and the day I signed on was golf night. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, was that the
That was the day Elspeth had me do the thing on the wall. Yeah.
I see. Yeah, that's right. And you were swinging some pretty good.
Forrest Gumping it up, man.
Yeah, you are. You were going pretty well at the driving range, to be fair. And I was, and after that, I think we just kind of got into the concert and whatever. And yeah, you obviously got the bug for that, and everyone will know how much Wallace loves concert if you've ever seen him about it. And if you come and watch it this year, you'll see he's loving it just as much as he did last year. It's pretty awesome. He's got a big part and it's going really well and it's pretty fun. But no, I think if you asked Wallace 2 years ago, where will he be in 2 years, I don't think the answer would have been national vice chair of a Young Farmers Committee. But here we are.
Hell made them, mate. They'll lose out, like.
Here we are. Somehow, I remember when you first told me it, I was like, how have you angled that one? You're like, I don't know. It's just Laura asked me, and I just said, yeah, why not? But off the back of that, you've had some pretty amazing experiences. Tell us about the big one.
Oh, well, and just quickly before I do, like, you said that sort of Young Farmers wasn't for me. I originally, in 2015, started a Young Farmers Club. I chaired it, secretary, treasured it on Arran to try to get it going, and it worked for a bit, but it didn't happen. But I was a naysayer of Young Farmers. I absolutely was. And now, I think at the time when you guys got to know me before I joined here in Lornith, that I wasn't a naysayer of Young Farmers anymore. I'd realised its potential. I just was conscious of the position I was in with you know, Leicester students and stuff.
You'd have been socialising with your students.
Yeah, and we made sure to make sure it was, you know, it's done right. And I'm there as a sort of member to look out for everyone, is what I more see. Yes, I have good fun, but, you know, it's also, I very much more see it as that sort of thing, just with the age I am. But it's been great. But yeah, got voted on as that, which was mad. probably didn't appreciate what it meant. At the time, I'll be completely honest. And then sort of got to know Penny and speak about what it means. And yeah, I mean, first off, Penny's great. Like, she's quite the character, drives the company along with the remainder of the SLT in the right way. But met some great folk through the SLT side, first off.
What's the SLT stand for?
Oh yeah, good point, sorry. Senior Leadership Team. So that's your chair and vice chair of all regional areas. So Sally and Beth in the north, Gillian and James in the east, and then Colin and Mikey in the west that we're in. And then you've got your your chair and your vice of your six national committees. Don't need to go through all the names. They've all been on the podcast. I think it was 113. And then your national chair and vice chair, which is Jane and Ali, and then your CEO, which is Penny Montgomery. Learn a lot about strategy. I've been involved in a lot of sort of fancy stuff in my time through work and whatnot, but really learning about strategy there was great. But I think if you asked a lot of folk what they get out of Young Farmers, they'll say speech making, tug of war, stock judging, that sort of thing. I've done just about none of the things everyone says, and arguably the one thing everyone says is their favourite is either stock judging, tug of war, or speech making. Speech making's normally the one that they're like, oh, I absolutely loved that. It was probably the thing I disliked the most, and not at all putting that on speech making. My career is built off of literally speech making, whether it's lecturing, it's making speeches, or, you know, podcasting, somewhat related. But I'm trying to do it in an engaging manner for fun, not actually for how to create a direct speech. And I really struggled with that. And it was a skill that I sort of had the discussion with myself. I was like, do I want to get really good at this? Or try and focus on the thing that I know I'm quite good at the minute and it is my career? Because they would have impacted each other. So that was the reason. I mean, it's nothing against speech making. But when you ask folk what they normally get out of Young Farmers, that's what it is. Mine's pretty different. Concert's definitely the thing. I mean, I absolutely love concert. really do enjoy it. Obviously, Lauren Ith are the only one that have a good concert. No, I'm joking. I'm not allowed to say that anymore, and it's not true at all. There's some fantastic things out there. I just love the team here. I love the family that I feel part of nowadays. But in June, I got phoned by Jane Strawhorn, which is normally just to give me abuse, but it wasn't this time. It was like, she basically just said, would you like to come to Rwanda? And I was like, what kind of question is that? what are we joking?
That's a long distance date.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As it goes, it ended up being that. No, I said yes straight away. Yeah, I know. I said yes straight away, Jane. I know you're listening, so how are you getting on? I said yes straight away. I did not know if I had a passport. I would have paid the £200-300 it was, whatever it is, to make sure I had one to go. Like, I was not saying no to that. And I'm not saying no to that for a few reasons. First off, 1994, what happened in Rwanda, just sickening. I'll get into that later. But I read about it when I was younger and it always really interested me. And I was also kind of aware that it had came back from that. I could never be prepared for what actually was the case. But yeah, the third reason, and turned out to be my main reason, was Artucast number 71. I filmed with a guy called Regis Umejeraneza. And Regis was just brilliant. Like, he just, his story is one of caring about food and farming in Rwanda, taking a role in policy, starting a business that basically took a product, the sweet potato, that was readily available in Rwanda, but it was frowned upon, which I thought was really weird. And I didn't understand that concept until I went there, because I thought of Rwanda as we think of all Central African countries. Yeah, not as progressive as we are. It's a terrible generalisation, but that's what I thought. And as I got there, that wasn't the case. But filmed with Regis, and as you do with every podcast guest, you say something along the lines of keep in touch. I keep in touch with 90%, but then I also say, oh, we'll have to meet up. And maybe 10% of the time I've done that, never in a million years did I think Regis would be one of the folk that was going to happen with. And then, yeah, came off the plane in Kigali, and there he was, man. It was, what a joy. But yeah, the reason we were going there, and it turned out to be two things, was it was Jane Strawhorn, Paul Carruth, Lindsay Campbell and myself in the first batch, which is National Chair, Comms and Marketing Officer, International National Chair, and myself for Tanzania, and then Rwanda. We met up with Katie Burns, who's an ex-National Chair and had been to Rwanda before. But Tanzania was a 4-H food summit. Now, for those that don't know what 4-H is, in Scotland you probably won't. If you're in America, you definitely will. It's essentially, well, it's not essentially, it's the biggest youth group in the world. There's more American 4-H members than there is people in Scotland. Yeah. And it's just their life, man. They love it. And we've sort of, as SEYFC, became sort of unofficially affiliated. 4-H is never going to overtake SEYFC. Certainly in the farming side, I mean, I see no reason there couldn't be one in Scotland, but I think that would probably hurt SEYFC. I think we play that role. We're not just for farmers. I think it's very important to mention that. And that was for the food summit. what turned out to be when we were there, it was delayed by 3 years because of COVID, and it turned out the day we were there was the 30-year anniversary of Tanzania 4-H. And it was just a great celebration. Like, it was on African time. Man, we never did anything on time. But we just had a family that we'd never met. I've never felt that feeling before. I have to a point, but Jane, Lindsay, Paul and I walked in and we never sat together for the first 4 days. because you just sat with someone else from America, from Taiwan, from Jamaica, from Tanzania, from, I'm going to miss some, Sweden, Finland, Norway, and Guinea. Like, we just, someone from everywhere, and I loved it. And I have to shout out Colin from Jamaica. I'll do a wee impression of him. In Tanzania, there was this drink. It was Fanta Citron, right?
Yep.
I'm sure we've got it here.
Fanta Lemon, yeah.
No. No, 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 my friend. Fanta Citron. Right, slightly green, right? Okay. And the Fanta there is different, even the normal Fanta from ours. Right. And Colin summed it up why. He goes, you know, you never believe it, man. He says, you know, back in Jamaica and here in Tanzania, the Fanta is amazing. If you go to America or the UK, they use that rubbish beet sugar. It's so harsh. However, in Jamaica and here in Tanzania, it's that cane sugar. Wow!
Where did you say he was from?
Jamaica.
Like, sounds like he's from Newcastle.
Nah, man, genuinely, shut up. Like, it's, that is, I would say...
Jordy in Jamaica? Yeah, that's amazing.
He was the same first name as me. But yeah, we had a great time. We toured Tanzania. We did a lot of things. We almost died in a bus 3 times. We just done so much. We learned about youth development. We learned about whatever. And it was great. It was just a lovely cultural experience. And I got the bug for travelling the second I was there. We'd been travelling. We went Dubai. Went Dubai, Kilimanjaro. Sorry, Dubai, Dar es Salaam, Kilimanjaro. We'd been travelling for the best part of a day. We turned up all absolutely stinking. And 40 of us just got into a hall and started running each other around the church place. It looked like a church with people on our backs. It was a great time. And it ended with, we did two things that, out with what we were there to do, that will, three things really, that will live with me for a while. One, going to an orphanage. Now, it was an orphanage school. And we met one of the to-be foster parents, adopted parents. And I still speak to him. Every week, Abraham, shout out if you're listening, great guy, adopted this little girl. I'm sure it's now through, it wasn't at the time, where her mum died either at birth or around that time, and our dad was killed in a motorcycle accident, which happens quite a lot. It's the biggest killer in Tanzania.
Really?
Which I'm not surprised about, because they're everywhere. And as the story goes, I'll tell you how topical it was. But he was there with this little girl, man. He called her daddy, and it was just the sweetest thing on the planet. Like, I was just taken aback, and I'm now a donor to that place. Like, I donate $1,000 a year to them. Just, they're working with so little and changing lives, man. You probably saw the post of me dancing with them like that. That was a big moment in my life. Another one, and yeah, we walked out, maybe 15, nah, that's a lie, 80 metres from where the kids were. We got in the bus and a motorbike hit us. So that just shows you just how... Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Everyone all right?
Bust his knee, man. He was like, oh, shit. I mean, like, I don't know how his knee didn't disappear. Just get back on the bike. They had a wee fight for a minute and then they left. No insurance papers, nothing. Then went to a place called Ndoro Waterfall, which is 2,500 metres up Kilimanjaro, which I kind of forget sometimes that I've been. Go back to my Instagram in August and you'll see the coolest Tresemme funded photo of me ever, just sort of standing in the water. But nah, lovely experience with Davis, lovely guy, who took us around that, who Jane Strawhorn made sure to say looked like Fabinho from Liverpool. And then the other one was on the last day, going to Tarangire Safari. We all sort of think of safari as kids, don't we? Like, we're aware of these animals, like, they're the main thing, and you could talk about giraffes and elephants and zebras and stuff, and you always think you'll see them at, like, Blair Drummond or whatever, which yeah. I had because I loved it. Did I honestly think I would ever see it? It's probably one of those things that if I became successful, yes, I definitely would, but I didn't think I was going to experience it this soon, and yeah, man, wow. Seeing a zebra and a giraffe cross the road together, like, Jesus, aww. Just life-changing, man. Lindsay was gassed at the zebras, Jane was gassed at the elephants, and I just had a great time, whether it was, you know, zebras, water buck, bunch of fans, like, I loved it all. Got attacked by a monkey, and there's a photo that looks like I'm trying to knock it out, but really good fun. And then the next one was what turned out to be a really cool flight, so it ended up in first class. Now, I think it'd be fair to say Rwanda Air's first class is somewhat different to, like, Qantas Airways, but it was good, man. We had a lot of space, and we got a nice wee hot towel and stuff. Oh my God, I forgot to mention, we have to thank I can't remember his name. That's terrible. We'll think about it. Over the Dixon at Dar es Salaam Airport, because we must have lost our stuff 4 times. I got interrogated for stealing someone's bag. It was a scary experience, but Dixon got us out. But anyway, yeah, once Tanzania was done, I feel like Lindsay's listening. We should mention there was a massive swimming pool in Tanzania that didn't fill until the last day, and it started filling the first day with a garden hose. I had to run basically into the bush, right? Not joking, to change the water to start filling it up a bit more. And that just then meant we didn't have water in the hotel for the week.
Nice.
Great experience, though. I will.
Was it worth it?
Oh, man, 100%. I got to sit in a swimming pool. In a place that was almost as warm as Scotland at that point, because we just didn't get the for some reason it was like 24 or something like that. It wasn't intense.
Wouldn't complain about that.
Yeah, it was lovely, man. It was really nice. But awesome. Yeah, it was a Tanzania will. I think Tanzania will never not hold a perfectly lovely place in my heart. The people were so welcoming. Everyone, I mean everyone, even the people that weren't welcoming, I cared about. Like, there's this guy, we were at the gates to Kilimanjaro, where you either pay your $83 to get in, or you get AK-47. He's standing there with it. Actually, for those that are gun buffs, it's an AK-74U, but you know, he's standing there with it, and I like took a photo with him, wasn't fussed, but they were like, don't go through, you're getting popped. Like, genuinely, yeah. But it's like a touristy place, there's a lot of people there, they're selling things. Jane, we don't need to get into that, but this guy comes up to me and he was like, can I have 50 shilling? Now, 50 shilling to us sounds like £2.50 if we know pre-decimalisation. 50 shilling is 50 Tanzanian shilling. Tanzanian shilling sits about 2,400 to the dollar. So he was asking me for about £2. No, 0.2 pence.
Jeez.
Yeah, like it's the poverty in Tanzania is sickening. Tanzania is a massive place.
What you gave him it?
What?
I hope you gave him.
I gave him $5 and I genuinely regret it. I could have got in trouble doing that.
Why?
Everyone hounded me. Like, I had to get to the bus. Like,
oh, jeez.
I wasn't going to get hurt, right? I just wasn't. There was people there to protect me, but I probably, and I didn't say this at the time because I would have got in trouble, I probably put them somewhat at risk by doing that. I really shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And the argument is do they actually need it? Is that quite, because I don't know. Because that's what
they're going to use that for.
That's, well, not strictly that. I mean, it's, have they just realised this is a way to make money? I don't like looking at it that way. I think that makes it look like people are beneath us. Yeah. But that's what we were told a lot by tour guides that we trusted. So, yeah, that was...
That's all an experience, though.
Yeah, of course it is, and it's understanding it. And you look at Tanzania, I think it's 1,456 kilometres of coastline. Like, it's got that ability to trade. It's got safari and Kilimanjaro, you know, everyone goes there. And it's just, it's poor. Like, it's poor. And it's instilled. Like, I think we got the vibe that the schools didn't want to teach too high in case they became too smart.
Oh, really?
We got the vibe. They told us.
No way.
Yeah. It was sad. And
that's sick.
I just loved everyone there. There wasn't a person that... that didn't want me there, that didn't want to feel my ginger beard, that didn't want to, like, I would dance in the street and they'd play drums. Like, I felt so at home. Then we flew to Rwanda, right?
First class.
First class, yeah. Let's call it half class, yeah. You know, so we flew to Rwanda with the most gorgeous view ever, looking out the plane, seeing Mount Meru above the clouds and being like, man, I wish I could see Kilimanjaro. Looking back further and under the propeller, here's this thing, double the height of the clouds. Like, gorgeous, utterly gorgeous. Snow, bang smack in middle Africa.
Awesome.
Never not snowing. Insane.
That's amazing.
Deep in summer. Anyway, that was amazing. Landed in Kigali, saw Regis. Great guy. He got like a first class escort. Got to this Kigali hotel and I'm like, I genuinely feel like I'm in London or New York or Paris. This is the most progressive place I have been in my life.
Really?
And I'm involving London and Edinburgh and everything in that. 100%. I've never seen a more pristine, cared for, and safe feeling city. And that's what Rwanda is. And it was a culture shock for someone that knows about Rwanda and had heard Jane talking about the fact it's got the best roads in the Central Eastern Africa. I thought, well, maybe that's not much to brag about. Mm. It's just they're better.
Yeah, just their standards are lower.
They're better than everywhere here. They're better than the newly done roads here. There's not one pothole in Rwanda. And we drove all over it. Like, I've never been so impressed. But what it didn't have that Tanzania did was that outright friendliness. No one wasn't nice. No one... Everyone
didn't have the welcomingness.
It did. It was welcoming. Everyone was lovely. But... And there'll be Rwandans listening to this, I'm sure. And I'm sure every person that's listening to this that I met was lovely, because everyone I spoke to that I was involved with, whether it was RYAF or whatever, just welcomed us with open arms. You felt like there was a cultural PTSD from what happened in the 90s.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's surprising. That's like two generations back as well.
It's not, though. It's 3 years before I was born. You know,
you're pretty old.
Shut up. Statistically, my mum or dad would have been killed then. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Sorry. Statistically, out of my grandparents and my mum and dad, one of what I meant is one of those six would have been killed. That's just what happened. 14% were killed.
So do you feel that the millennials, though, are like still have the PTSD from it? The ones that would just
that weren't born
hear about it? Yeah. The ones that would hear about it, not know about it.
If you know your mum, your gran, your auntie, your elder brother, sister, friend, whatever, grandparent, neighbour, person you don't know that's lived in the same house as you, was not just killed, but genitally mutilated, raped after the mutilation. All this probably done in front of the parent. Kids killed in parents' eyes from stab wounds to the eyes. Killed in parents' hands from stab wounds to the eyes. Grenades in the shower. Like, I wasn't there, and I've only been in Rwanda for 7 days, and it changed me. Like, it can't not. You're walking on the roads that are now in better condition of a place where a pickup was overturned. This is an actual photo I saw. A pickup was overturned with 14 people in or around it, through it, dead. Like, you cannot comprehend how that impacts people. Whether that's that you saw it, that you've heard about it, that you just know what happened. You might not even spoke to someone about it because you're too scared to. And there's no fear of talking about it now. Some people want to, some people don't. Yeah. Some people don't want to talk about it for very obvious reasons. But like, we just spoke about it here and there. We had a guy in the bar that spoke to us about it. I made a point of never bringing it up.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to speak to it and they were happy to field questions, you know, I would do that. But we went to Kigali Memorial Museum, and nothing's changed me more than that. Jesus Christ. It's just like, you're above 250,000 bodies. That's where you are. You're above it.
Yeah.
And there's what really, really stuck out to me was there was three coffins. And I wondered, what were those people? Why did they get a coffin? Why were they important enough to get a coffin? What were they? I never got that. And I couldn't speak. I didn't know how to ask anything. Jane had read up a lot in Rwanda and Tanzania and flying and whatnot, and I knew a lot before, a lot more about the past as opposed to the now, and the start hit Jane hugely, and then she dealt with it very well. The going through, like I've said this to so many folk, I genuinely don't know what I felt. I don't think I was sad. I remember being angry at one woman who we were strictly told, don't take photos in this room. There's literal photos of dead people. Like, there's probably people in the vicinity who that's their auntie, that's their gran, whatever. And this woman from America was taking photos. And I'm not someone that causes a scene, but I was like, get the fuck off your phone. That's the only emotion I remember. It was just this solemn inability to feel. I think I read every word in there twice, maybe three times. Like, definitely once, but most twice and some three times. You just walk through this, photos of what happened and stories of the heroes, stories of the anti-heroes, the villains, I guess. It's a tricky one. It's somewhat comparable to Israel at the minute. I don't know too much about Israel and what's happening, but you look at Israel don't treat a lot of places well. They don't treat Palestine well. They don't treat Gaza well. And obviously Hamas being part of Gaza have retaliated to the point of we can't condone it. But then you look back and you think, well, can you? I don't think you can, and I think it's good. I'm going to probably get a lot of backlash for saying that from folk that listen, but what happened in Rwanda was one bracket of people, because of the shape of their nose, that's what it was.
Really?
Yeah. Were treated poorly, and they become the aggressor. So let's say you were Hutu. You would be able to sit at the front of the class, you would be treated well. Let's say I was Tutsi, I'd probably be told to sit at the back, because I was second. And then I'm like, nah, fuck you. That's what happened. And then 14% of the population was wiped out in 94 days.
Jeez.
That's what happened, and the only time I felt emotion was the last room. The last room was called genocide, and what genocide means. And it transitioned into the sort of final step, which was children of the genocide. And the genocide, just, it spoke about Holocaust, the Balkans, all the stuff we've heard of. We've heard of them all. And as a bit of an addict to sort of human extremes, I kind of know a lot about it, but it didn't really mean it. I was learning more, and it was interesting. Then you're into this child of the Holocaust, and I think everyone should see something like that, whether that's Auschwitz or this or whatever. I think it should be seen, because I went in somewhat proud of my ability to have not shown too much of emotion and tried to be there for everyone else if I could be. I was the one that folk needed to be there for when we came out. There was a story of, those examples I gave you were all from the children's room. A brother and sister who were killed in the shower together by a grenade. And it says stuff like, there was this brother and sister, and it says, I knew their names up until recently, and I think my brain's just intentionally purged it, because it just makes me cry every time I think about it. It was a brother and sister, 2 and 3. One was daddy's little girl, one was mummy's little boy. Swimming's massive in Rwanda. Loved swimming, loved football, loved milk, loved chocolate. Died to a grenade in the shower. And that's how it's read, and it just... one stabbed in the eye in mother's arms, like, just sickening things you can't consider as a human.
You can't even comprehend that, can you?
Nah, we grew up like, oh, someone stole my football. And
we're so blind.
Yeah.
Like, we're so blind to what happens in the rest of the world at times.
But now Rwanda is more progressive than they've ever seen.
And how is that?
Just sheer efficiency, and we are going to change what we are. And that's what they've done. I mean,
but where's the money came from?
So, support from a lot of places, definitely. Yeah. We support them a lot. There's a lot of negative press at the minute that we're sending refugees to Rwanda. Honest opinion, I think someone without a lot of money, which I think is a glaring stereotype, but I'm going to assume people who are refugees are in that position, would be supported better by Paul Kagame, who's the president of Rwanda, than they would be here. I genuinely think we'd be better. And I'm...
People have no knowledge of it, though, would just think, oh, Rwanda, it'll be a poor African country.
Yeah, of course. And it's...
As a stereotype.
But that is a stereotype. Everything's right. I mean, you think of sort of sport, though. How often do you see names like Tanzania and Egypt and Central African Republic or Congo in football stadiums? Just about never. Yeah. Visit Rwanda's everywhere. It's Arsenal, PSG, is it the Falcons in the States? Like, it's everywhere. They've got a football stadium with 17,000 capacity. They don't really have a massive... Tanzanian football's probably followed more in Tanzania than Rwandan is in Rwanda. But they're creating sport. The Cycle World Championships is there in 2025.
Nice.
We've been invited back. Don't know, to watch. I can't imagine to compete. They're doing sport. They're doing... When you think of Tanzania and Rwanda, you think Tanzania very touristy. Rwanda's got gorillas, probably about it. But they're capitalising tourism now because they're making a fun city. Kigali, you can do stuff.
Yeah.
And it looks like, quote-unquote, hate the term, developed city. But man, it's impressive. Like, if you go to a pub, right, bar, restaurant, whatever, and I'm working there, I'm the waiter, yeah, and you've paid, I don't know, let's say you've paid, 25,000 Rwandan franc, which is give or take about £28. And I'm like, oh, any chance of 2,000 franc? £2, $2, whatever, roughly. That's seen as corruption. And your job as the guest would be to call me out on that. And I'd probably lose my job or certainly get... They just want rid of that. It happens. Of course it happens. But yeah, amazing. Your fields were bright green as well. Yeah. Bright green. Yeah. Bright green. And this time of year, they are green. Like, they're like Dumfries, mate. Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe we're walking through it. And I'm like, man, this is like August.
How's that? I don't get that.
So you get like an insane rainfall once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And it's quite sad. Tanzania, loads of people are dying in this wet season.
Yeah.
Tanzania and Rwanda touch each other, so they're close.
You got to use what you got, though. You're never going to change that, though.
Yeah, so. We were milking dairy cows in the middle of a Swiss Alpine hill.
Awesome.
In Rwanda. Yeah. Awesome. Lovely. What an experience.
Awesome. So
probably milk more cows in Rwanda than I have in Scotland.
Probably.
Nah, not quite.
Wouldn't take me though, would it?
If I waited for a year, I probably would.
Exactly. So yeah, that's pretty unbelievable. Go back and listen to the R2 cast with Lindsay, Jane, and Paul if you want to hear more about that.
And Katie, sorry.
It's pretty unbelievable. That story. You can tell that's. It's changed Watts quite a lot, and I think it's not the only time this year that Wallace has been to a country that, well, that's obviously faced a lot of crisis in the past, and this country's faced a lot of crisis right now. It's probably the most spoken about one in the last couple of years. It's pretty devastating, and it's amazing what people are able to do to help. And there was a thing set up called Pickups for Peace, where they take pickups across to help families out that have lost their homes and lost more than you can even imagine. And Wallace got an opportunity to help out with that and take a pickup over to Ukraine. So tell us about that experience. How did that compare to going to Rwanda?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you can't... You probably in some ways expected Rwanda to... I didn't expect it to be a war zone, because I knew it wasn't.
Yeah.
But you expect it to be an extremely negative situation in that regard. But you go to Ukraine, which in our eyes is a war zone, and I felt like I was on holiday. This is the interesting contrast of... Ukraine wants to be a tourist hub right now, and it absolutely can be. I felt safer in Lviv than I have in Paisley. Paisley's maybe a bad shout, sorry for everyone from Paisley, but it's not exactly the nicest place. I mean, genuinely, I literally had my throat minorly cut in Paisley once. I felt like I could have a great time in Lviv. I walked at midnight on my own. I went and spoke to randomers. They said, they ask you what language you speak, and I'm like, nah, I'm going to try Ukrainian. I know a few things, now I can't remember any of them, but I learned enough to sort of say where can I go and that sort of thing. And they were just so welcoming. But the story was, basically, take pickups and as much... I mean, we were full to the gunnels, like, as much as you could. He drove it out to Ukraine, which was an amazing experience. Spoke about Kate Rawls that we had on. I was with Kate's brother in the pickup, and Bill was an interesting gentleman in himself, and it was just a nice experience driving from Memmis in Scotland to Newcastle. Boat from Newcastle to Amsterdam. With a great team of folk. Just all... wanting to see what was happening and feeling like they could do a small thing, you know? And yeah, you stopped off here and there. We drove through Germany. First off, autobahns should be everywhere.
Yeah.
Safest thing on the planet.
Really?
Oh man, I'm not just saying it because I like driving faster because I think I can get there quicker. Safest thing on the planet. I mean, I genuinely...
Everybody says that. Yes. I've heard that's done them.
But it's because it's instilled in people there.
Yeah.
Don't be an idiot. You go onto a motorway here, man.
You've like, what speed did you actually drive when you were on?
So, the places where it was limited, it was normally 130k, which is about 85, I think.
Yeah.
But that was only sort of around junctions. You know, the rest of the time, I mean, we couldn't really go much above 100, but people would be going 140, 150 miles an hour. But
it didn't look dangerous.
Nah, so like you consider a motorway here, yeah? You've got someone in the fast lane at fucking 60, right, and then you've got someone in the slow lane gets bored, so they undercut. Lorries are overtaken, like everything's wrong.
Yeah, it's dangerous, yeah.
Lorries never come out of the first lane.
Yeah.
Unless it's a tri-lane motorway where they can go out into second and overtake. Yeah. Never go out of that lane. If there's only two, they'll never go out. If you're overtaking, people could see where you're in pickups. If they get behind you and they realise I'm going quicker than them, they wait until you go past the lorry. You come in, they overtake. Once in Germany, which was maybe about 5 hours, I saw someone overtake and stay in the fast lane. Once.
That'll happen all times? The time here.
20-minute journey, you'll see five.
Oh, yeah. Easy.
And that person was torn to shreds. Like, genuinely. No one was undercutting, doing anything wrong when they were there, but when you walked past, you saw everyone like, yeah, they weren't happy. But that's because it ruins that efficiency. It's created for that, and it's so safe. I was so impressed. That's a really different story. Through Germany, came out of Poland. Gorgeous place, by the way. Wow. You think Poland, you think Krakow and Warsaw. I ended up in Krakow and really didn't like it, to be honest. But we stayed in a place called Katy Rochef. If you've seen the name Roklaw in Poland, it's spelled Rochef. It's pronounced Rochef. Stayed in this like old, massive, old hunting mansion, I'd assume. And if you go to Poland, try Zurek. The nicest soup I've ever had. Don't really know what it was. Loved it. Stayed in Poland for the night, and then it was a 5-hour journey from Poland to the Ukrainian border. And got to the Ukrainian border, had some checks. There was a line of like 100 cars we just drove past. Nice. And then it got intense. Like, you never felt, and I'll say this so many times, you never felt in danger. At that point, you're like, we're going into like a war-torn country.
Yeah.
Like, we. Just for reference, when you go into Lviv, when you go into the Ukrainian border, you're still closer to Amsterdam than you are to the war.
Right.
Yeah, we forget how big Ukraine is. Ukraine's massive. It's insane. Yeah, it's half a unit.
Well, that's why they want it.
Exactly. Yeah, of course it is. That along with how good the ground is. But yeah, that was... we got in and there was people greeting us with thank yous and everything. And then we had one rule. Don't stop. That's keep what we're moving. Told. Yeah. Keep someone rocking. Get in the way, you hit them, their fault. Genuinely, right? Really? Yeah. And it was just nice roads for a while with some combines driving around and whatever. And still a lot of harvest on the go. Got to Lviv and they said, remember, no stop. go into Lviv and you've got trams, you've got buses, you've got cars. Everyone stopped. We were flying through the middle of Glasgow.
Just like you had Blues and Twos on.
At 45 miles an hour. Amazing. What an experience. I mean, from a fun perspective, you just seemed like, yeah, genuinely fun. And then we got this government building, dropped the pickups off, and went and had a good time in Lviv. And by good time, I mean, we went and sat in cafes, we chatted with the locals, we went to shops, we went to restaurant after, we went to pub. Some of the boys found, you can work it out. Just a really good time. A really good time. A really, really fun holiday. Next day, the guys that started Pickups for Peace, Keith, Mark and Vince. Vince sort of being... the three of them being... In 2005, they'd basically worked up a massive clientele of landowners. So, Ed, you can go to Ukraine and buy ground. But you could rent the ability. You could buy the ability to rent that ground. Because everyone was basically given a hectare. You get 100 people in 100 people in a village. And there's maybe, 1,000 hectares. You'd be given a hectare. And it's split. That's how it was done. Post-Soviet. So 1989. So that's how that worked. Which was quite interesting. But they went round. You ready for the number? Bought the ability to farm 200,000 hectares. To which I often go to say 0.2, and I'm like, nah, there's not a number for that big of land. There's not a number for 1 million hectares. It's just not a thing. You know what I mean? You would think 0.2 something doesn't exist. It's so big. Now, for reference, Scotland's, some people say 7.8, some people say 8.2 million hectares because of the islands. So they had, give or take, 16th, 17th of Scotland being farmed. Yeah. Brilliant ground. They were in the east. They were in the west of Ukraine. The east is famously known, the Ukrainian steppes, arguably top four ground in the world. The west was good, not nearly as good, but they noticed the rainfall was triple. So they've actually managed to make it. They tripled yields in the first 7 years. They went from wheat yields of 1.5 tonne to the hectare to almost 5.5.
How?
Realising that that water use could be captured and used, not just ran off into ditches. Because the big challenge they have in the steppes is it's dry. And yep. irrigation's expensive.
Yeah.
They realised they could do it themselves. And I'm not going to go into any further soil stuff. Keith told me some of the stuff well over my head, I'll be honest. Sold that business for... Never told me a fee, a bit. I think it'd be fair to say.
A big one.
Yeah, a big bit. But remember, they didn't sell the land. They sold the ability to farm that land, but consolidating that clientele was massive. Yeah. 2018, started this business where they wanted to sell potato starch. And they got to stage in... Sorry, 2019. Got to stage March 10th, I think it was, 2020. They're allowed to start building. And then the day before the war, they got the final people in to finish it. And they have a notable unit now that is taking in Lady Rosetta, Arsenal and Lady Rose. Lady Claire, sorry. If they meet Crispin standards, great, go to Crisps. If they don't, everything else gets blitzed, turned into potato starch. I said to them, you wouldn't have a porter cabin here in the UK in that time. You just wouldn't. They've got this full-on system. So that was amazing, that was great. And then the afternoon came and the holiday changed. We went to while we were there. We gave the pickups over and we went to what was an impromptu graveyard of 1,400 graves. They were there a month before, there was 900. And they weren't there when they started in March. And that is people in Lviv fighting in the East. So you don't have a clue how many people are dying in the East. Yeah, there was a guy, 26th December 1996, that's my exact birthday. Damn. And he would probably be top 60% in age.
Wow.
Yeah, it was harrowing. You realise why you're there. And Keith Dawson, I mean, if you want to go listen to my podcast with Vince, talking about Pickups for Peace, just Spotify, Pickups for Peace, R2Cast. But Keith put it so well. We've put over 250 pickups out to the Ukraine. For every pickup we put out there, that's an extra person that's at the dinner table this Christmas. And you're like, shit. You said about people losing their homes and stuff. Folk don't give a fuck about their house. They just want their family there. And this guy, Alexei, and the sort of strong accent I put on there was Russian. He's Eastern Ukrainian, so he's got a Russian accent. And he's shown us this video of him in one of the pickups we took out before. And he's driving his phone... If you're listening, Vosa, it's not the biggest issue of this story. And there's bomb drones dropping bombs in front of him. And he's going, they never hit me. Right? This guy's made a different Jeez. Gravy, man. Like, we were saying about Rwanda, like, we've got it easy. Like, again, we've got it easy.
Yeah.
And one other thing that I'll just mention quickly. If you go onto my Instagram, you'll see a photo of me in a big missile-looking thing. It is a missile. At the farm, about 200 metres away, 250 metres away, this missile, the height of me landed, right? They've got it, and they're like, yes. I was like, do you mind if I take a photo to show folk? And they're like, that's funny, because they missed us, right? And then I sat it down, and he goes, Wallace, we should probably tell you, we don't know if bomb explode yet. But yeah, amazing experience. Flew back from Krakow, and yeah, the next journey was coming up, I guess.
Amazing. So... Yeah, you'd been to Tanzania, you'd been to Rwanda. Not long after, you went to Ukraine and had that amazing experience. But you weren't quite done yet for the year, no, were you, with your travelling? Still had a few flights left in you. You still have another continent left in you.
I did, yeah, good point. Yeah.
Where was that?
Yeah, so, yeah, in the 95 days between the start of August and the middle of November, I did 17 flights, and this flight was heading out to America, out to Indianapolis. So an American football game, Indiana Colts. For anyone that knows or is interested in it, that's where Peyton Manning won his Super Bowl. Indianapolis Colts, and then Indiana Pacers basketball game, so it's proper took in some American culture. But yeah, we were there with work. It's not one to talk about forever, but we were there with work promoting SRUC on the global stage. A lot of changes in SRUC lately, bringing in a vet course, and you know, the changes to agricultural teaching as well. And yeah, I mean, Craig that I was with has taught in the States. They teach agriculture at school level, which I think is shocking. We don't. which we'll come on to in Offield. And then, yeah, 69,000 agriculture students there over 3 days. And yeah, they're all taught it in school. We've got to learn from them. So yeah, I mean, there's not much more to say. It was an amazing experience. I loved it. And I came back and 3 days later got on another plane.
Yes.
Heading up more north than Oslo to Shetland. Just to speak at an event. They invited me and Louise Patterson for 3 days. We did some Zorb football. We, yeah, had a good time. And for anyone that likes Shetland the show or this farming life, we stayed at Bigton Farm. So with the Budges, Amy, Mum Helen, Auntie Anne, or Aunt Annie, just so hospitable. And what a view. Over to St Ninian's Isle, which is a tombolo. Mind them in geography. They're connected by land naturally. And it's just this gorgeous tombolo beach. Beautiful. So yeah, Shetland's another experience. And then, yeah, one more flight left after that.
Awesome. Now you're pretty well travelled anyway. You can certainly say that if you weren't cultured at the start of the year, you can hopefully say that you're cultured by the end of it with different experiences. Doing many people all had a more wider range of experiences than you have this year. It's good. But I think when I can't remember when it was. I'm trying to think when it was. But I remember asking you the question, like, what do you want to achieve over the next 5 years, whatever? And I think the conversation was just between me and you. I don't think it was on a podcast. Pretty sure it was, because you wouldn't have said this at the time. But you said, I don't really know, like, I just want to see where the world takes me. But one thing I do want to tick off is doing a Nuffield scholarship. At that point, it was just like, a few years down the line. Then, maybe just 3 months, maybe 6 months later, I get a text saying, I've just been accepted as a Nuffield scholar. And I'm like, what the hell, man? You literally, you're going to complete life by the age of 30. Like, you've got to slow down. You, like, you bought a house and got divorced, and now you've already done this.
Divorced, wasn't married.
Basically. You got a house and split up with someone, and you've completed what some people haven't done in a whole lifetime. So, tell us about that, the big one, the Nuffield scholarship.
Probably on that comment, I should probably mention that I now own another property, and I'm in a very happy relationship with Yasmin now. Yeah,
I've been too nice to this podcast so far.
Yeah, you've got to get something there. It's funny you say that. 6 months ago, I wouldn't be surprised if I was saying it publicly, because something like an Offfield application is not something someone talks about. I was like, I share the whole process, and I have done for some time. So I was saying it the first time I said it publicly was the NMR Awards, which was in January.
Was that in January?
Yeah.
This could have been last year then.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Ages back.
This is, yeah. This
so it was just a throwaway comment.
Yeah, it was just a throwaway comment.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. For those that are in farming, you've probably heard enough field scholarships. Arguably more accepted than a PhD in our sector. You know, a pretty major thing.
Definitely.
For those that don't, it's a global travel scholarship to better agriculture in whichever country it's based in. Obviously, we're UK. There's Poland, Brazil, Australia, America, Holland, and Zimbabwe, I believe. So yeah, amazing thing to be involved in. Very lucky to have been accepted. My application was aimed at agricultural education, which we mentioned earlier, and how we can better it. So I've basically got a 4-point plan that I came up with in the interview, as they said, do you have objectives? Genuinely. And it's funny, actually, the interview is quite interesting. Everyone says it's the most daunting thing in the world. They asked me, have you enjoyed this? And I was like, oh, love it, man. And he was like, yeah, no one comes in this confident. I was like, I love what I'm doing, and if I can prove that, I'm not going to try and sound boring. So yeah, I really did enjoy the interview process. It was 13 people grilling you, but I loved it. And they said, what's your sort of objectives? And I was like, well, I've got a 4-point plan. As I said, plan, I was like, I don't know what number one is. But number one is looking on the ground. You know, are people on farms being taught things correctly? You know, there's a lot of unofficial education that happens on farms that's great. There's also a lot of unofficial education that happens that's bad. It's not safe. It's, you know, not correct.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you know. Is that happening right? Are folk being trained from a health and safety and a technical perspective? Then in schools, like I was talking about in the States, is it done in primary and high school? I think in primary school in Scotland, RET are doing a lot of good stuff. NFU education are. Secondary school is kind of minimal. SRUC are kind of tapping into it. Countryside Learning are doing some good stuff. But none of it's curricular.
No.
None of it's got to happen.
No.
Or very little of it is. Third point, and very much my main point, was further in higher education. How are we teaching agriculture to people that want to study agriculture? College, university. And then the fourth one being a sort of cross, you know, I guess a cross UK implementation plan. Try and speak to different institutions, try and work together a bit more. I would like to do. I'd really like to do that, actually. So yeah, that's my plan, to go to four places, Japan, Singapore, Holland and Switzerland. Might or might not have got sponsorship from a few different other people and might or might not. And by might or might not mean probably will, add in Ethiopia, Kenya, New Zealand and the States. And that will be every continent at that point ticked off, because I'm going to Brazil in March through Nuffield. Just to learn what they're doing, bring back and try and put agricultural education on the right way. I think we're doing a lot of good stuff, particularly at our campus. I genuinely do. I wouldn't be saying it if I didn't. I said it earlier. But let's not dwell on that. Let's ride the wave in the right direction. So
amazing.
That's my off-field plan.
Amazing. It'll be really good to hear over the next year how that progresses. Hopefully we can actually have another podcast where we can dive deep into it, where it's not just you kind of throwing the odd comment in on someone else's, where someone else is the guest, and we can hopefully get the real details. And I think that could take more than one podcast with the amount of countries you're planning to go to. So that'll be a really fun experience over the next year, just seeing how that progresses. But I want to ask you a question that we kind of, not the same as the All-In, but over the next year, outside of Nuffield, what do you want to achieve?
See, I've got a really boring answer to this, but I can try and make a better answer as well if you want.
Well, give me the boring one.
And then I'll try to work on a better one as I go. My answer to this, when everyone asks, where do you see yourself in 5 years, a year, 10 years, whatever, is going in the same direction I am and be further along that line. That's all I care about. And it's back to that Ross McKelvey thing. I don't have an end goal. I don't know what that end goal is. I just want to be doing better. But I'll give you a few things. I want to be presenting on TV.
Yep.
Big one, I know.
Yep.
Think it could happen. Really want to be monetized and all in. Yeah. Want to actually be able to start paying you because you're doing good work. Want to see the current fourth years graduate. I will cry that day because they were my first ever first years.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. It's your first full journey.
Yeah. There's five in fourth year, four of which started with me in first year. Tabby, Amy, Chloe, Erin, if you're listening, and then Zoe's joined in. Seeing those five will just be a really special day for me. Out with Nuffield. Podcast, like, to 100 episodes. So that means about four bonuses. Yeah, exactly, that's it. But yeah, also, do you know one thing I really want to do, and it wouldn't have been the case last year? I want to keep on travelling, and I'm going to be doing that with Nuffield, but I just want to...
Yeah.
Culture is the best education I've had, and I've had a master's degree. Like, it's amazing. I can't explain how good it is, and I would say that's probably it. The other thing is just, you know, I think it's probably important. I've created a brand off of being pretty bloody busy without realising I'm busy, and now I have a person I kind of want to spend time with. I'm like,
yeah.
Really need to make more, and it's not really, I generally want to make more time to actually spend with Yasmin, so I'm really enjoying that. So yeah, that too, you've got to consider personal life as well. Probably seeing family more, probably been a bit too driven lately.
Yeah, 100%. I can feel that a lot. I think there's far too many people that way, and families, it's not there forever, so you've got to see them while I can. And I'm pretty blessed with having them 5 minutes down the road at times, and I don't even see them probably as much as I should.
Yeah.
So it's obviously pretty tough when you're even a couple hours away. But quick fire question. First thing that comes to the top of your head, what's the favourite part of the last year?
Oh, Tanzania.
Tanzania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed me. Like, it's never not going to have an impact on me. Every day it does. Yeah, 100%.
Amazing.
Did you want me to say you're coming on as co-host?
No, not at all. No, if you said that over 10 to do it, I'd have been like, you piece of
you're
shit.
A liar.
Get out of his house. But no, I think over that, yeah, you can see Wallace has had a pretty busy year. We've really only just scratched the surface with a lot of the things. We could go into way more detail, and as I said, I'm sure we will, especially on Nuffield. That'll be really interesting to see how that goes, and we'll go into way more detail on that in the future. And the other things that he's got going on over the next 12 months, hopefully we'll be able to have way more stories to look back on at this time next year. This thank you very much, Wallace, for that. It's been, to be honest, I didn't actually, you've even opened my eyes more to the Tanzania and Rwanda trip. Like, I've heard you speak about it quite a lot in different things, but probably not to that depth and level, how intense it was and how devastating it all is. So it's pretty amazing. But this is this has been the R2Cast Christmas special. The last podcast, the last R2K cast was 164 with Ifan Roberts. Go back and listen to that if you're into dairy farming, and learn how someone at 28 years old started with nothing and got to 360 dairy cows, because I doubt there's many people that can say that. R2Cast 165, which will be the first of the new year on Monday the 8th of January, is with Amy Stoner. That is the first episode of Series 4, where we will hopefully reach R2Cast 200, which will be a really exciting time in the not-so-distant future. So, Wallace, do you want to just say goodbye?
Goodbye. No, goodbye. Yeah, no, good stuff, Ed. I enjoyed that. And, yeah, I'm actually going to go film with Amy Stoner in 11 minutes. Thank you for listening for the year. This will be coming out the day after Christmas, which is my birthday, so feel free to say happy birthday. Have a good
or
new
not.
Year. Or not, yeah, Ed won't. And have a good new year when it comes. We'll see you for the next episode with Amy in the new year. See you then.